This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Folks, the U.S. Department of Education is resuming its efforts to collect on defaulted federal student loans, reviving what they were doing before COVID stepped in and had all kinds of continuances and disruptions in the collection of that. And here to talk to us about it is Andrew Gillen, research fellow at the Cato Institute's Center for Educational Freedom. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Andrew, what is this going to look like as we try to, I guess, get back into the game of collecting on this debt that's owed?
Yes, that's a great question. So it's going to look very, very different to a certain segment of students and to kind of policymakers in general. So one of the things for policymakers that the student loan pause, which lasted from 2020 until basically 2024, one of the things that did is it made student loans very expensive for the government to provide. And so the government's losing a ton of money on these student loans. And so one of the things that restarting payments will do is make it so that student loans aren't as big of a coster for the government. For the students, obviously, a lot of them have graduated in those few years, so they might have never even made a student loan in their lives yet, a payment, that is. And so for them, just the process of you know, budgeting for that and figuring out where to send the money, that'll be new to them. Now this isn't you know, a bad thing in my opinion. It's just there are going to be some transitional pains there.
And if I recall, in one of your previous articles, you mentioned that I want to say prior to the income-driven repayment plan that was devised, that only 40%, just under 40% of students were repaying under that model. Are the models going to actually change now?
So that's still an open question. So for your listeners who don't know all the background here, so there's the normal student loan repayment, which is just like a mortgage or a car payment where you pay, you know, $250 a month for, you know, 10 years or 15 years. But there's also these income-driven repayment plans, which instead of paying a set amount per month, you pay like 10% of your income above, say, the poverty line. And the really nice thing about those plans is that, particularly when you first graduate from college, or if you drop out, you tend to have a lot of like unstable employment for a little while. So there might be months where like you literally don't have a job that month. You can't afford, you know, the $250. And so the nice thing about these income driven repayment plans is that they adjust your payment to based on your income. The problem is that these plans tend to be very badly designed, and they also tend to be irresistible for politicians to monkey around with the parameters to make them extremely generous. So one of the things the Biden administration tried to do was they took kind of some existing authority to create these income-driven repayment plans, and they basically dropped the payment down so low, and they increased the poverty line exemption to, you know, 225% of the poverty line. So basically, anybody who made less than like $30,000 would never have to make a student loan payment. And if you did have to make a payment, it was only 5% on your income above that amount. And so it basically turned student loans from a loan program into a delayed grant program, because it was basically just going to make it so very few people were repaying their loans. Now, right now, that particular plan, it was called the SAVE plan, that's tied up in courts, and so it's been paused by the courts. And one of the things that Republicans in the House are thinking about doing in their reconciliation bill is throwing out that particular plan. And so I would expect that particular plan to go away, either by court order or by a new legislation from Congress. But there are these other plans out there as well. And so I like the concept of income-driven repayment. I just think we've kind of botched the implementation.
So how do we actually get out of this? It seems like this is very circular, right? We're talking about existing loans and trying to figure out how people are going to pay them. All the while, we're still lending gobs and gobs of money to folks that are going to go into a field of work that we know, based on salary surveys, cannot support the debt that they're creating and are likely to default and likely not to pay it back anytime soon.
Yeah, so there are a ton of these problems out there. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons why government lending is a bad idea. Because if you look at a private lender, no private lender would lend to, you know, a slacker student who's going to a bad college and majoring in a field with high unemployment, right? Like that raises so many red flags that every private lender would run screaming from that. But the government just will send these checks year after year to students who may not know any better, and it's kind of setting both them and the government up for a lot of financial pain in the future. And so I think that's one of the main reasons that we should switch to a private lending system, where you actually have lenders doing due diligence about, okay, is this educational investment likely to lead to the student being able to repay this loan? And the problem is, for right now, the government's making, I've seen good estimates anywhere from a quarter to a third of the loans that the government makes are just these kind of predictably terrible financial investments that don't benefit the student, don't benefit the government. The only one who makes out like a bandit from these are the schools, because they get all the tuition money and they get to keep all that.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be that hard to match up a particular degree in the compensation that they would expect to get. We have all kinds of compensation studies that are done biannually, some even monthly, you know, and kind of match that up. I mean, and this would affect all. I mean, even if you were to have a degree in accounting or a CPA, some of these schools you're leaving with $500,000 in debt. And, you know, I mean, the entry level of an accountant doesn't support that. Not in your wildest dreams could anyone walk in and get a loan like that.
Yeah. Well, and the poster, the poster boy example of this is there's a dentist a few years ago who had $1 million in student loan debt, which is insane. There's no reason it ever should have gotten to that level. Now, fortunately, that's extremely rare. Like, there's a reason this case made headlines, right? So most debt, particularly at the undergraduate level, is actually pretty reasonable amounts. The main problem you run in at the undergraduate level is if you're majoring in a field where the job offers just aren't that good, even what we would think of as kind of a reasonable amount of debt can be problematic if you've got a really low salary. Where we see a huge amount of problems are with graduate school debt, because those are uncapped. So students can really borrow, you know, $100,000, $200,000. It's not rare to see law students coming out with you know, six figures of debt. And that's fine if they end up at, you know, one of these big law firms that pays a lot of money, but a lot of them don't. A lot of them end up relatively low paid. And if you've got six figures of student loan debt, that just, the math just not work out.
And we still don't know, not to bring this, you know, curveball in, but AI is having a huge impact on, I think, a lot of these high paying jobs that you come out of, right? Because there are a lot of activities that you would involve yourself in. Just let's just say the legal practice as one. You're seeing the utilization of AI a lot more. There is a little bit of a pushback on that that's occurring at the present time. But in other walks of life, you're seeing it having a huge impact. You can't bill the numbers that you would typically bill your clients when you're just pressing a couple of buttons and taking out reports, you know, that you actually would have had actual time invested in a lot of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are beginning to see the first kind of big job displacements. So from what I've seen, it hasn't led to a lot of layoffs yet, but what it's done is it's dried up the entry level positions for things like coding. And if you remember, just a few years ago, like whenever an industry was going through a downfall, everybody was always like, "Oh, just learn to code." And now you got people graduating with computer science degrees that are really struggling to get these entry level positions because the AI coding is one of the things that does very well. I would imagine paralegals might fall into that same category where you aren't quite getting rid of your lawyer. But a lot of the lawyers' helpers, so these paralegals, a lot of that research is probably now being done by AI or will be soon. And so I think we're starting to see the beginning of what I would call job displacement from AI. But I think this is just the beginning. Like, this is only going to get bigger and bigger from here on out because these models are just getting better and better over time.
And the reason I bring it up to further your point about the government getting out of this business is that we all know they're not very nimble, right? And they don't react real time. But you have a lot of stuff that's happening right now real time that's going to completely alter, modify salaries across all kinds of disciplines. And we're just keep throwing money at kids. I don't know that we're even thinking about, you know, what this job market's going to look like when we get out.
Yeah. Well, but this is one case where I feel like the college students themselves are actually ahead of the curve here. Because I've been studying this industry for a very, very long time. And you know, one thing that was always true is that, you know, enrollments went up. So, you know, every year there were more college students than there was the year before. And that stopped. So we actually have about 1.5 million fewer college students today than we did, say, 2-3 years ago. It might be 4 years ago. So anyway, the point is we've sort of plateaued on college enrollment. Now, you could argue maybe some of this was due to demographics, but I think a big part of the story here is students see that a lot of the supposed skills that they're that they think they're going to get in these colleges just are not going to be valued enough to make it worthwhile. So I think we're starting to see kind of a lot of college students make this decision that maybe college isn't the immediate answer that everybody always thought it was, the safe answer.
Well, the interesting thing for me is that when you get down to the granular level, and I know that you and others at Cato have written about this, it is the increases of administrative staff and administration at these universities, and not really student services. And, you know, it's more so backroom operations going on and bigger salaries being paid there and more people being hired there than anywhere else in higher ed.
Yeah, absolutely. Administrative bloat is a huge problem throughout higher education, and I really think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why it happened, but one of the things that might help reverse this is if all of a sudden we got fewer students, if these schools start to see budgetary pressures, I think that might be one of the only things that can address this administrative bloat issue.
The other thing is implementation of AI by administration and whether or not they're going to do that and lead to, you know, a reduction in force. I don't believe it's going to happen as long as we keep letting students borrow as much money as they can borrow, because they're all about keeping those tuitions as high as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the university finances are very, very tricky because the drop in enrollment. Now, this isn't going to affect your flagship schools or anything like that, because they can just admit more students. But for the schools that we're really going to start to see enrollments dropping, the way universities have set up their finances, they've converted their labor costs, so things like faculty, into a fixed cost because they grant tenure. And so just very small changes in an enrollment can have really huge impacts on their finances because they've made these lifelong commitments to their professors in terms of employment. And so we could actually see a lot of movement relatively soon. Now we're going to see it at these open access institutions that we're going to see the enrollment hit first. Because right now, you know, if Ohio State, if there aren't as many college students, instead of admitting, you know, 10% of applicants, they'll admit 15%. So like, they'll still be able to fill all their seats. But as they do that, they're going to draw even more students away from these other colleges that are sort of lower down the pecking order, for lack of a better word to describe it. And so we could see some pretty big impacts at those schools first. And how they respond to that, I think, will be very interesting. So do they respond to that budget hit by getting rid of majors? Do they respond to it by cutting administrative bloat? Do they cut the student athletics? Like, it'll be very interesting. And I don't think every school is going to respond the same way. But that's definitely something that I'm watching is how they respond to this.
If you would, for the listening audience, I think a lot of people realize that a lot of schools are compelled, in order to develop the quality of their staff, of their professors, of that menu, so to speak, is they have to offer tenure to them for that, you know, to, because they would not otherwise probably go teach at that school, right? So that's one of the reasons they do that. Is that what you were talking about earlier?
So to an extent, honestly, at this point, I think it's just kind of force of habit. So
it's so, yeah. There's no redeeming value to it at all.
Well, so if you're at one of these top schools, and your professors are doing, you know, this cutting edge research, you do generally want to have some long term protection. But if you're talking about you know, a community college, they really don't need to offer their professors tenure, because they're like, if you're teaching at a community college, you're teaching. You really don't have, and you're teaching so many classes that you don't have a whole lot of time to be doing research. So the controversial research is where the tenure protection really comes in. And that's where it's like most defensible. But like for community colleges, you really don't need tenure protection, because like you're teaching accounting 101, right? Like you don't need tenure protection to do that. And to their credit, a lot of community colleges don't have tenure. But they'll rely on a lot of adjuncts to teach these classes. We're basically like part-time professors.
Yeah.
I did that
for 9 years.
Yeah. Well, me too. Yeah. I would think that tenure would become less common going forward as well. Just because if we do enter one of these more volatile time periods where you know, maybe AI really impacts computer science, but it has no impact on, you know, anthropology or something like that. Like all of a sudden your computer science and your anthropology departments are out of balance, right? And so having things like tenure around that sort of lock you into these long-term inflexible arrangements, I would hope to see some of those start to disappear.
Let me ask this last question. It's on our text line. It comes out comes up a lot. We only have a minute, though, Andrew. Government guarantees all loans and schools have no risk. Yay or nay?
That is correct. Yeah. So the school basically cannot lose from taking a student showing up on their campus with a student loan, because even if the student drops out after that semester, school still gets to keep all that money. Even if the student drops out and then never makes a payment, school gets to keep the money. Government loses the money, and students' financial future is dinged by credit reports and wage garnishment and stuff like that.
And the school, there's no failure rate that government looks at and dings schools at all, period.
There's one right now that's called the cohort default rate. So if 40% of your students default, the government will cut off future access to student loans for that school. Or if you're above 30% of students defaulting for, I think, 3 years, the school will also cut off. But they won't go back and, like, try to extract that money from the school. So, like, bygones are bygones. They'll just cut you off for future loans.
So they just can't get future student loans. All right.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you joining us today, Andrew Gillen, research fellow at the Cato Institute Center for Educational Freedom. You provided a lot of really great background information on this. And, I mean, this is going to continue to be a problem unless and until we just truly get our hands around it and figure out something that's going to make sense for sure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk-In text line. Stay with us.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We were going to talk about the 2025 rookie minicamp. And then something happened Saturday morning. Jeff, tell us about it.
Wait, what are you talking about? Something happened?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, something happened.
You know,
I'm not supposed to know. You're supposed to know.
I've been trying to add to my vocabulary, and I decided I'm going to start using the word chicanery because I just think it's a great word. And then I realized I can say shuck cannery, and that's like, it's just perfect, kismet. But yeah, right. Derek Carr retired. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of details to nail down, but that's the important thing is Derek Carr has retired. He will not be a member of the Saints moving forward. And it was fitting that it happened on rookie minicamp day because, you know, you turn the page and what's on the next page is Tyler Shuck, the rookie quarterback they just drafted out of Louisville, a guy that, you know, Kellen Moore said, hey, we're going to have a quarterback competition. He mentioned Shuck, Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener. He said they're all going to be on the same page, right, the same level as you go into it. It's going to be something they decide during training camp, during preseason. Everyone's going to get a shot. But you just – I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario where Tyler is not at least the odds-on favorite to be that starter, and we got our first look at him. You know, he's an impressive kid. You know, I think his personality is really engaging, really endearing, and we'll see. But yeah, I think it's kind of the other way I kind of phrase it. It kind of felt like going into this offseason, all of the talk about Derek Carr, all of the kind of subplots and side quests that he had been on, that the team had been on, trying to figure this out. Kind of felt like there was just an anchor. Like you were going forward, you were trying to go into the new era, but there was kind of an anchor behind you, and you know what that kind of represented—the retirement, and you know, including some financial help. They're going to get a good chunk of that money back that they had committed to them. You know, it kind of felt like that anchor had been kind of knocked off, and you can at least go forward without that kind of dragging you back. And I think that's what you can hope for. I don't think this necessarily is something that's going to result in more wins. Heck, it might result in fewer wins. But it's a scenario that you can chart a new path forward and at least feel good about the direction you're going in.
Yeah, if you're going to be in what has been coined as a rebuild, right, a lot of the questions are the friction points of rebuild. The more you can get out of the way, I think the better off you're going to be. I agree with you. This may lead to fewer wins, but you really want to look 2 to 3 years down the road as opposed to the immediacy of this season. Of course, everybody wants to win, but that's not always the reality.
Yeah, I think – coming off the Drew Brees era, coming off Sean Payton retiring, I don't think that most people would have said, hey, you should tear it all down, rebuild right now, or at least not like give it a chance with all these veterans in the room to try to be competitive and take advantage of the window where you have Alvin Kamara and Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis and at that point Michael Thomas, right? Like, I understand why they did that. The problem is once you miss the playoffs 4 seasons in a row, it's very clear that that's gone. That's done. You're not doing that. Like, that's, you're not continuing anything. You're trying to rebuild to a level where you're competitive, but it felt like with the Derek Carr scenario, it was, you're trying to get to the middle. You're not trying to get to the top. You're trying to get to the middle so that you can compete. And I don't think, you know, once you're in that situation, I don't think most fans would be upset about the concept of a rebuild. I think more people were upset about that they weren't fully committing to that process. And you're doing a lot of half measures. And then you look across the NFC South and you see the Bucks doing the opposite. They fully committed to kind of transitioning past Tom Brady when he retired. And they were able to do it in such a way that they did remain competitive while also biting the bullet from a cap perspective. So I think that's really what it is. It's kind of just a transition into a new head coaching era. You're going to have a new quarterback, whoever that ends up being. You know, it's kind of a bummer for some of the veterans on the roster. You know, maybe you buck expectations and win a bunch of games. I don't know what that's going to mean for Alvin Kamara, Cam Jordan, some of these guys. If you get to midseason and things have not gone that way and you're kind of mired in one of these 10, 12 lost seasons, right? But it kind of feels like a means to an end, and I think that's what fans wanted to see, and that's what they're getting.
So, in the end, the contract renegotiation with Derek Carr, and now this announcement, how meaningful is this for them? Does it create a situation where their landscape, they're a little more nimble with freeing up some of this salary cap money?
Yeah, so, you know, it hasn't been officially kind of reported in the sense that the Saints haven't announced it. It hasn't been out on any official salary cap table. But, you know, basically they had committed $40 million to Derek Carr with his restructure. He got a $10 million signing bonus. They're not going to try to get that back. Derek Carr is going to walk away and not try to get the $30 million. So they'll effectively be getting a $30 million rebate on the $80 million that they had owed. So it's going to allow for some decent, I mean, that's a good chunk of change at the end of the day. And you're probably going to be starting a quarterback on a rookie contract for the foreseeable future. So, you know, it creates a lot of cap flexibility. And, you know, I think for the Saints, what it should represent is kind of a return to the middle from a cap perspective so that, you know, I look at the Commanders this year versus the Commanders last year when they added Jaden Daniels. They weren't on a spending spree last year. After what happened, after Jaden Daniels came in and immediately gave the entire franchise hope and a new direction, they go to the NFC Championship. You look at this offseason, they're spending like crazy. They're bringing people in with trades. You know, they're going out and signing free agents because they see their title window as open. You know, and I think for any team, what you want to be is in a cap situation where the moment you feel like your title window is open, that you can lean into it fully and throw the money at the pieces that you need to maximize that chance. It's what the Saints were doing in 2018 and 2019 as they tried to, you know, get that last one with Drew. The problem is once that window slams shut, all that money's on the other side of it, you can't get it back. So I think that's where the Saints are, is from a cap perspective, they're kind of loading up so that, you know, if Tyler Shuck comes out and plays great, maybe next year that is where you throw some money out there and start to build things up. If that's not the case and you feel like you're a couple years away still, then, you know, you make the sensible decisions and you retain that flexibility. You continue building through the draft. But what this does is I would say it kind of chops a year off the back end of what was a multi-year drawback on the cap spending, so that, you know, you can possibly get to that point a little quicker.
I guess a lot of folks thought that Rattler would be the one who would be stepping up to fill that bill. What is it that the rookie brings that, you know, the reality is there are things that he brings that Rattler just can't do anything about, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be a competition. I don't think Kellen Moore is blowing smoke when he says that it's going to be an even-footed competition. You're going to let these guys go in there, and whoever rises up and becomes and kind of seizes that role throughout the course of the preseason, that's going to be it. A lot of it is going to come down to, you know, is Tyler ready? Is a rookie quarterback ready to lead an offense to have those leadership qualities that every quarterback needs? But, you know, from a trait scenario, you know, Spencer has a great arm, but he's 6 foot. You know, he's not an incredible athlete. He's a good athlete, not an incredible athlete. You're going to stand him next to a 6 foot five guy who runs better, who probably has a slightly stronger arm, who kind of just fits all the, you know, he checks all the boxes of what you'd kind of, if you designed a quarterback in a lab, what you'd want for a guy so he can see over the line. You know, he can run if you need him to. He can roll out and throw with accuracy. I think he's also just the guy that you drafted with Kellen Moore in the building, right? You know, Kellen mm-hmm. Moore kind of handpicked his quarterback. And, you know, as much as he may like Spencer Rattler, you know, that's not his guy. Tyler Shuck is his guy. That doesn't mean that Spencer can't go out and win that job. But I do think it presents a hurdle for him that does not exist for Tyler, because he's going to have to, you know, you draft Tyler in the second round because you're convinced he can be your guy for the future. Spencer Rattler is going to have to go out there and in this competition and through the process prove to the coaching staff that he is the guy that you should start right now. And he's going to also have to prove why you should wait on the 25-year-old rookie for however long that is. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily like skill set wise, like he can't be the starter. He just has some headwinds in front of him that, you know, make it a little more difficult. And that's even more true for Jake Haener, who is in year three and doesn't even have the starting experience that a Spencer Rattler does.
Yeah, I just think when you're 6'5", that's just a huge benefit. You know, you look, as a sideline reporter, you see it all the time. You're standing there and you're trying to look across that offensive line. I don't even remember how tall you are, Jeff. But at 6 feet, you don't see much.
I would be standing I'm six there. Foot. Yeah, it would be like standing with a bunch of trees in front of me, trying to be like, what's going on over there? You know, like trying to throw a football through a redwood forest and hope that I don't hit anything. I guess golfing would be a better analogy. But, yeah, you know, there's a reason that quarterbacks tend to be 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". And the Drew Brees of the world, the Russell Wilsons of the world are the exception. You can make it, you know, but it's a lot more difficult. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see. I think it changes the whole dynamic of this 2025 rookie minicamp, right?
I mean, no question. And I will mention
what
one
we
more
thought
thing.
Going in.
One bit of news before we go. So the Saints are actually making their veteran minicamp open this year, June 10th and 11th. It's the first time they've done that since I've been here. Last year, they went out to California for the training camps, and no one even saw practices. So fans will be able to get out there this year.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Great job, Jeff, and please keep it up. We will visit with you shortly as this progresses.
Sounds good. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with
us. Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin, or what that clunking sound from your dryer is. With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This. Well, immigration activists are complaining about the fact that a couple of immigration and custom enforcement agents went into a Jefferson Parish court, First Parish Court, in order to check whether or not some individuals that are wanted by them were there to handle traffic matters that they had in that court. And it turns out they were. They were there for DWI. And they were ultimately arrested. And they're all worried now about the chilling effect of whether or not someone's going to go to this court to testify about activities where they may have been a victim or otherwise. And we know that there's all kinds of protections for those individuals that work with ICE that are given a special status for certain cases if they're going to testify against violent individuals and they no longer have that fear of deportation. What's really irritating about the situation and that we continue to have to hear this is that if it were you or I or anyone else who's a citizen here that walked into First Parish Court and deputies or federal agents or others recognize you and that you are wanted, whether a civil warrant, a criminal warrant, or otherwise, let's guess what would happen. You got it. They're going to put the cuffs on you and they're going to take you out of there. No questions asked. And what's interesting is we'll never have the mainstream media writing about the fact that in a parish court in Jefferson Parish, that two citizens were arrested on a warrant from the courthouse. You remember reading any of those articles? I keep looking for them. I don't see them. But any time that there's an illegal alien that gets arrested at a drugstore, at a street corner, at a courthouse, here, there, or anywhere else, we are inundated with articles by the mainstream media pointing out the fact that these individuals were arrested for being in this country illegally. See the duality here? One begins to wonder, what benefits are there to being a U.S. citizen? Because it seems as though if you're not, there's a whole lot more privilege that comes and a whole lot more consideration about the downstream implication to an individual's life, but not yours. Because as a citizen, you don't have kids, right? You don't have significant others. You don't have any of that. There's no articles about separating you from your children when you get arrested, right? There's no articles about your significant other, right? Talking about how they're going to miss you when you go to jail. I don't see those articles. Do you? I don't see them at all. But we're inundated with all the articles of how individuals are impacted because they consciously decided to break the rules, break the laws, and we are supposed to feel sorry for all of them. But no coverage on Citizens. No coverage for you. We'll be right back.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.